Hi, this is Sean Sainamore, and I'm with Mark Willey with Passivhouse Accelerator. And thanks for tuning into this bonus special episode of the Passivhouse podcast recorded at FiascCon 23 in Houston, Texas. And a big thank you to Zola Windows for their support of the series. And we're lucky to have Mr. Chris Magwood here in not even like little Houston. This is big Houston. It's a big city here. And you spoke yesterday about the embodied carbon materials. You had a tag team of Skylar and Jacob. Fill us in about, again, who you are. And luckily, we've had you on the podcast and some other features and some other presentations. But just give us an update of where you're at these days, who you are, and we'll talk about what occurred yesterday.
Okay, great. Yeah. So nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me. My name is Chris Magwood. I actually sort of have two hats that I wear. I'm with RMI, the Rocky Mountain Institute, is my full-time gig these days. I sort of keep my Builders for Climate Action and BEAM hat on. It's sort of my evenings and weekend gig to kind of keep that rolling too.
Amazing. So yeah, just let's talk about the kind of like you had 8 hours worth of information that you're giving out to the users there. Maybe to give us the Coles notes of just your part in that amazing collaboration that was there. Three amazing speakers and presenters and talking about embodied carbon and how it works well with Passivhouse principles.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially Jacob Rakusin and I delivered the BEAM training course, which we typically do kind of online in person. So it was really great to have real live human beings sitting there and listening. And so we kind of went through the background, why people should care about embodied carbon, and then kind of did a good deep dive into the tool, how to use it. And then really the focus was, because everybody in the room, Passivhouse people are smart people, doesn't take them long to figure out tools and modeling. So we spent a lot of time thinking about and talking about analysis. Like, okay, great, you got these numbers. What do the numbers mean? How do you use them? How do you interpret them? How do you shape your practice after looking at these numbers? We spent a lot of time talking about carbon storage and how is that valued. And it was a really great discussion. And then, Skylar added his incredible piece with his OCEC tool that kind of adds like another layer and really helps with the analysis because he gets into the mechanical side of things and the carbon footprint of refrigerants. So how going passive house and making all that equipment smaller, using less refrigerant also has this, great embodied carbon impact. And so, by the end of the day, I think people were like, oh, like here's kind of like a whole life way of looking at the carbon footprint of a building. So they kind of got the embodied and the operational piece of the day.
I like how things have evolved. I like the evolution of what you've done with the carbon elephant in the room to now diving like really deep in the woods. So I mean, the progress of your career, and with the launch of BEAM, the BEAM calculator, impressive stuff. Maybe you want to just give a little highlight of what's happening now with RMI and where you're at with that and what kind of research projects you're working on.
Yeah, thanks for letting me talk about that. The work at RMI is really exciting. There's kind of two things that I'm involved in now. One is with ResNet, I'm leading a standard development committee so that there will be a national standard for how do we measure embodied carbon in new homes and doing it in a way that lines up with, energy raters and passive house raters. Basically, people are already making models of these buildings. They're making area-based models. They're collecting almost all the information you need to make an embodied carbon model. Let's standardize that procedure and sort of make sure that people who are doing energy modeling work can also do embodied carbon work. So that standard's really exciting to be involved in. And then I'm working on this program called Home Builders Can, which is a sort of, it's called a Carbon Action Network. That's the CAN part.
Yeah.
And it's really, I've started calling it a sort of support group for home builders who are thinking about embodied carbon.
Yeah.
And really, we're going to be there to help people figure out how do you do the modeling? How do you do benchmarking? How do you identify materials and design changes that you can make? How do you, make a plan that enables you to sort of like get on a reduction pathway?
Yeah.
And so we're just going to start in the new year kind of supporting this group of builders to figure all this out.
Great stuff. I mean, I'm a big fan of your work and what you've been up to. And again, every time I get to connect with you, learn something more about what you're up to and how you're just such an advocate for our industry when it comes to the embodied carbon and the conversations that you've made people think about. And now, like yesterday, just diving deeper into the woods and the weeds of how to deal with our carbon footprint.
Yeah. And how do you build with the woods and the weeds?
Yes, absolutely.
That's the interesting thing. Like if we all look back, calculators were the size of rooms. They decreased in size and they decreased in size. At the same element, our building materials were very small in nature in terms of SKUs. And that increased in size. And that increased in size. And so now we have a calculator that essentially works inside of a telephone that can compute this. But we have new materials. And we will continue. We can all make the assumption there'll be new evolutions in those materials. And so the fact that as these come online, you guys learn of this either on your own or these companies contact you and you add that to it, right? It's not a closed book.
Yeah.
It's an additional. So the advancements of what we've seen from structure to concrete to all these membranes and all these insulations, the fact that we can now quantify this and have this, we can reflect on what we've done, what we're doing, and we can help determine what's next. It's truly amazing. I'm still pausing for a second of what you said with this great feat that ResNet is incorporating everything. It is something I really didn't think we would see for many years. So a pause of celebration is great that now it's there. And the hard work's in front. So tell us some of the hard work and tell us what each of us can do.
Right. Well, on the standards front, you know, that the actual work is just beginning. ResNet sort of approved the standard development, and we just had our first sort of couple of meetings of everybody involved. And, you know, there's some work to do. There's lots of people from lots of different perspectives, and, you know, it's a consensus-based standard process. So it's like you have to listen to the builders and the manufacturers and the HERS raters and the policy people and everybody who are in the room. But, you know, I think it's really good. I think I'm shocked at how motivated everybody in the room is. I was thinking a bunch of the people in this room are going to be here to stop this from happening or try to derail it or slow it down. And really, I'm seeing that everybody's committed. They all have, you know, interests and stuff that, that we'll all be trying to balance. But, you know, the beautiful thing about the embodied carbon space is in the end, it's pretty simple math, right? Like you can't twist the math. A certain amount of emissions happens making this product. You put a certain amount of product in your building. That's the carbon footprint. And so, you know, really we're just, the things we'll end up arguing about are, do we include paint or do we not include paint? Do we include these things or not these things? But I think, you know, in the end, we'll come up with a really great and useful standard, you know, and sort of really leverage the knowledge and skill that exists with the HERS raters and the FEUS raters and all those folks already. They're kind of right smack in the middle of the decarbonization efforts of all of these builders. So like, let's give them this other piece and they can kind of be the one-stop, you know, decarb shop for home builders.
Yeah. I mean, it's really exciting. Just that collaboration. You know, I think a few years ago, manufacturers didn't want to give up their goods. And now that they're showing up at the table and being supportive of this and also trying to figure out, you know, how do they play and trying to understand the value of giving their, you know, carbon footprint, the material, and then also being able to make the change internally. Is there, you know, in that whole movement, is there still some laggards that are out there that need to shift, or are you seeing a real true collaboration across the board from industry, policy, government, manufacturers, clients? Or do you think there's still some areas of improvement from part of the industry?
I mean, I think there's areas of improvement. I think what's been inspiring is how quickly this has showed up on everybody's radar.
Gotcha.
And how quickly we've gotten past the point of people sort of not wanting to engage or you know, resisting that I really, that crumbled very quickly. I think part of it is because, you know, we are talking about modeling a whole building, and you might be a manufacturer with a higher carbon footprint material. This process doesn't mean nobody's going to use your material. It may be they're very committed to your material, so they'll make a change somewhere else to bring their total building number down. So yeah. It's not like people can never use a higher carbon footprint material again. And I think, you know, all of those manufacturers do see the writing on the wall. They know that they have to get on this path too. But I think everybody realizes that it's not a tomorrow change. Like yeah. The tomorrow change is, let's really start doing something about it. But that doing something, it might be a 3% reduction right now. But if you're serious about it, then you map out the next 10 years and you go, well, 3% today on top of 3 next year on top of 3 next year, you get there, you know, pretty quickly. So, and sometimes there's room for a big jump, but I think it feels like most people are ready to try to make those commitments, and yeah. That's pretty exciting.
Great stuff. Well, Chris, thanks for joining Mark and Sean here in Houston. And we're very thankful for the special episode that we're able to have with you. And again, appreciate the sponsorship from Zola Window. So thank you very much.
Thanks.